In this episode, I talk about when horses make the best decisions and how we need to be really paying attention and ready to set aside our egos when that happens. So here we go, episode 254, When Your Horse Knows Best. Hi, I'm Karen Rolfe, and welcome to Horse Training in Harmony. This podcast is about you making progress with your horse in a way that you both can love. It's about learning how to move and be in harmony. Because yes, you really can develop a horse to be both athletic and happy. When we show up as our best selves for our horses will show up for us. So, let's get started. Hello, everyone. I have been sitting here in front of my computer for more than a few minutes now. It seems like everybody and their brother decided to fly their small aircraft right over my house this evening. So currently, it sounds quiet enough to record a podcast. So let's hope that this continues and they've all gone where they want to go. Anyway, before I get into the horse stuff, I wanted to talk to you about something that I'm pretty excited about, which is I wrote another book. And if anybody has been following my Instagram, my personal Instagram, or my personal Facebook page, you've probably noticed that over the past few years, I've been sharing lots of photographs that I've been taking of often seemingly insignificant things or just taking a different kind of look at something common, taking an uncommon look at something that's very common or things that most of the time would be overlooked. And anyway, so that process started a few years ago, and it really started as a way of me kind of distracting myself from the troubles of the world. And through this process, it actually ended up being, you know, sort of led through this journey of noticing, of me examining my definition of what beautiful is and what beauty is. And it culminated in an experience, a pretty powerful realization about what life is all about. And these realizations were sort of delivered by these little messages. Anyway, so I put it together. It's very photography based, but I tell the true story about appreciation and the purpose of life. And so it's available. And it's available on Amazon, but you can also get it on places other than Amazon. So if you go to KarenRolfe.com, and all you have to do is spell my name correctly, so KarenRolfe.com, you can find it there. And it's just super fun to put something out. And don't worry, there are some pictures of horses in there. So you don't have to go through total withdrawal. Anyway, the book is also a lot about noticing. And it's about noticing moments, you know, and things that I think if you really noticed them all, you would realize that it would be completely overwhelming. I mean, there'd be nothing left to do but to be completely overcome by them. So maybe there's a reason why we don't notice these things all the time, but I wanted to share just before I came inside this evening. I just went out for a little walk and my horse Teo came over and just stood with me. And so I just stood there and he just stood there and the wind was kind of blowing. And as I'm just standing there and he's just standing there, there was just this beautiful moment where I could see his mane, you know, just blowing in the wind and kind of coming across my field of vision. And then my own hair was blowing also, you know, of course, in the same direction as his hair. And I just saw his hair and him and my hair and me, and I could feel my hair blowing and what that felt like. And because we were so sharing this moment, there was this feeling of I could feel his hair blowing inside him. And, you know, how could I not know what it feels like? We were just sharing this. It's hair and wind and blowing. And somehow that moment of just being there, feeling the wind, feeling my hair, seeing his hair and his mane, and it just felt like simply everything. Anyway, that's what was happening right before I came in here and then started listening to little airplanes. And I hear another little airplane in the distance, but I think it didn't go right over my house, so I think we're safe. Okay, let's shift gears. So I wanted to talk tonight about, I hope I can explain this well, but it's about when your horse knows best. Now, I have a feeling that the horses know best pretty much all the time. I mean, they definitely know what they're feeling and what they're experiencing and what they would like to be doing. And I think as a horse trainer, and horse lover, we need to be interested in that. So if the goal is understanding what our horses are feeling and what they want to do, then they're always going to be the best at that, right? They're always going to be better at knowing themselves than we know them. So it's a valid premise that maybe during training, your horse knows best. So I wanted to tell the story. It's about Cora. And again, it could be about all horses, but Cora is just so interesting a horse. And she's, you know, after all this time and all this experience, of course, the universe thinks it's really cute to send me a horse that's, she has her ways that she's challenging, but it's not about she's just challenging. It's just she thinks differently, or I'm aware of how differently she thinks a little bit more. She's just more sensitive, more expressive, maybe is the word. Like she wants me to know what she's thinking, maybe a little bit more than other horses share their opinions. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't be trying to listen. But anyway, so she's incredibly willing. She's incredibly motivated. She's a really good learner, but in general, would rather that she knows what to do and then have me stay completely out of the way. So a lot of the process that we're in right now is to really have her accepting my aids and realizing that maybe I have a couple good ideas and that my aides really are there to help, which is fair enough. So it's a very common thing that I prioritize in training, is that the horses are like, oh, they're aides. You'd put that on because then when I do it, I feel better, or that's easier, or I'm more aligned, or, you know, things like that. So she's young, so we're still wanting to really prioritize the basics. And at this stage, especially, that aides are there to help her. And later in life, then the aides will ask her to do hard things, right? But right now, it's all about her. And I'm going to have to pause for a second because here comes another little airplane. Okay, that one was a helicopter. Those are even louder. Anyway, okay, back to Cora. So let me kind of set the stage. She's going really well, but she's kind of does this mind reading thing. And she has a little bit of an asymmetry. I mean, everybody's asymmetrical, but she has somewhat of a preference for the right lead over the left lead, and she can get a little tight in the transitions. Sometimes bigger things happen during canter transitions, but right now we're at a stage where sometimes she's a little crooked, and then when I put my aids on to kind of make some suggestions, she gets a little like, ooh, why are you touching me? And then things get a little bit worse sometimes. And then also she really knows the difference of how she's feeling. And she knows when it's like, oh boy, I think we're going to canter soon and I don't feel aligned. And she gets irritated by that. So then she can get worried. She's like, oh no, we're going to do the left lead and I don't feel good. So there's a little bit of this thing where I have to try to manage, I have to help her be set up and in a good trot to canter from, and also manage the way I do the session so she doesn't start getting worried. And so all of this is, you know, normal horse training kind of stuff. But something started happening where when we were doing our trot, if she started to like click into like, ooh, there's the nice trot, right? When there's, she's really through and streaming forward and felt real, really aligned. And even if I wasn't thinking about cantering at all, like I was coming around, like getting ready to do a little shoulder in or something. And at any time, there would be this thought of like, ooh, there's the trot. And then she'd pick up the canter and it would be a really good transition. Like, you know, the good moment. It would be the decision that I would make as an experienced trainer of like, oh, here's the trot you need to be in order to take up the canter. Except we had much more success when she just did it on her own than when I tried to orchestrate it. And so not an uncommon thing, but what I found myself, you know, when it happened during the ride, I'm like, great, I'll take it, right? Good, go with it. No problem at all. And our success rate of nice canter departs was, you know, getting higher and higher. So like during a ride, fewer times that we picked up the wrong lead and better quality transitions at really good times. But I was sort of noticing like, I haven't really had any success asking for the canter, but I was getting a lot of successful cantering as long as nobody knew that I didn't have anything to do with it. And so, you know, when it happens in training and you learn to take it, right? You see, there's a moment that happens and you take it, you know, your horse accidentally does a flying change. Yeah, take it. You know, they accidentally do something else, like take it. Like you, those are golden moments. But this was like consistently her training was progressing seemingly independent of me. So, you take it one ride, you take it another ride, and then you start realizing, okay, well, here's another ride. We got, you know, two good transitions to the left lead. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, yeah, but I didn't ask for them. And I could feel even further in the back of my mind, a little voice that said, it doesn't count unless you asked for it. And I thought, that's actually interesting. It's an interesting thought. Is that true? Is it not valid unless I asked for it? And now we could even sort of debate if I was thinking about it, and she can read my thoughts, and a thought gets expressed through my body. So there was probably some muscle twitching, you know, firing going on, and some positional things that are happening when I was thinking of cantering. Like, I get that. But Cora was going faster than that. She was doing it faster than my conscious thought. You know, trotting around and then just, it's like, there it is, boom, she's cantering. So she's not falling out of balance into the canter. She's cantering at the moment of the best balance. Pretty cool. So, you know, these rides kept happening. I kept going, well, here's another ride where I have a higher percentage of really good canter departs. The quality of the canter depart is improving. The quality of the canter is improving. I seemingly have very, very little to do with it, but I'll give myself bonus points for going with it and following it in those moments. Because sometimes that's hard to do. You were planning on getting ready for a shoulder in, and boop, you're cantering. You've got to adjust really quickly to go with your horse and preserve the harmony in that moment. So then I would kind of play with this idea of like, okay, if I'm conscious of this dynamic happening, can I use that? And so I would do rides where I'd say plan on doing some walk work, some trot work, and then I'd literally say to her, I'm like, okay, anytime in the next you know moments, if you'd like to canter, you can. So I just put that out there and then just go about my business and let her pick when she would do it. and she would do it. Sometimes we'd be going along and then, you know, I'd like want to do one more canter, but I was getting sort of like the times that I was planning on cantering, it would tend to not be as good. So I'd have to kind of put the idea of cantering out there, let her know this is the next thing that we're going to do, but still then leave it up to her. So I have some barrels set up in the dressage arena area, and I kind of have them set up like the working equitation barrels, the three of them. And I'd be like, okay, Cora, let's do the barrel pattern for the sake of getting, you know, symmetry in those smaller turns at the trot. And I'm going to do the barrel pattern in this one way, so we end up with the circle right. And I was like, at the end of that, we'll come out, and then let's canter afterwards if it feels good. So I literally say this plan to her. I do the barrel pattern, and I was thinking we'll do the barrel pattern and we'll finish the last barrel, go straight, and then turn to the right and pick up the canter. But we come through the barrel pattern. She's perfect, doesn't miss a beat, feels exactly symmetrical, no feeling of anticipation. Come around the last barrel, and in the last quarter of the turn, she just picks up the most beautiful right lead and goes on with her life. I'm like, okay, yeah, that was pretty much exactly what I wanted. Stop, thank you, thank you. And I'm like, all right, let's do it. We'll do the pattern in the reverse order. So I said, ideally, I said, let's do this pattern again. You were great at the trot. The left lead's the trickier one. I was like, and I just said to her, and if it feels good at the end, then go ahead and canter. And then I really felt like I have to try not to ask her for the canter, because I usually mess it up. I do the barrel pattern. Okay, Karen, just focus on the trot, focus on the turning, focus on the alignment. Sure enough, come around that last circle. I'm thinking, this feels pretty good. Finish on the last quarter of the barrel, of the turn around the barrel. She perfectly picks up the canter. We turn left and continue with the canter. It's so subtle. And I mean, I'm used to practicing with subtlety. I'm used to having horses learn things and use their minds. So this, it's not like this sort of thing is foreign to me. I've been playing like this a while, and she's still taking it to a whole other level of, it's not just sensitivity to me. It's like she understands the goal. She's feeling her body and she's making really good decisions that blow me away almost every day that I ride her. So, is it cheating? Is it valid? Is it valid to get these amazing transitions even if I didn't ask, if I purposely don't ask? I actually can't tell you what my aid for the canter is for her. It feels like I'm just thinking about it. And it's really interesting, because isn't that the ideal? But somehow in training this young horse, I feel like, well, now she has to understand, you know, this is the aid for canter. I'm like, well, she's just skipping a whole bunch of steps there. And she's just going right to the mind meld. So it's been a really, really interesting process. And I figure, you know, if this is happening to me, if I'm thinking, no, it has to, I have to prove that I can ask for and get the canter anytime I want, if I'm feeling that, because that's not, you know, I'm not really into absolute control or, you know, domination and things like that. But it almost felt like I had to be the one to explain the horse what to do, and then we refine it until it's a mind meld. And like I say, Cora is just skipping that. And so if that kind of like egotistical flavor is sneaking in there with myself, that it's going to be happening to other people too. So to really entertain this idea that it's still valid. And the thing is, she's always right. Like, her transitions have always been better than the ones that I thought I was asking for. So she's showing me, She's showing me exactly what she needs to feel like in order to get that smooth transition. She's showing me exactly what it feels like to do a thoughtful decision into a canter. Like I said, she's not falling into the canter. She's not becoming unbalanced into the canter, which is often how you get young horse canters. She's not getting tense at the trot and the cantering. She's waiting till it's exactly the right moment. And I guess someday I'll learn what my cue for it is. But it's so interesting how she's teaching me exactly what she needs and exactly how it's going to go. And then, of course, I start thinking, you know, about other situations, because I'm sure this is not just Cora. I'm sure this is happening with other horses. Maybe the other horses are just like, I told you, you're not listening. Where Cora's like, hey, lady, you need to learn this. So, but I think about, you know, other horses like Solana, for example, where lateral work is not, it's not her like best feature. And then having her be in a moment where her collection, like on a day where like, ooh, she's really more collected today or really more engaged. And then from there, she just like slips into the shoulder in effortlessly. And I'm thinking, all right, she just showed me where it's easier for her to do lateral work. Right. And so that really shifted things in me. I'm like, well, it's really easy to do lateral work when she's here. So I don't want to ask for lateral work if she's not there. If the lateral work is more difficult one day, then I just know she's not in the balance she needs to be in. For her, she showed me that. So I've long said that if a horse understands and they can, they will. I think most of the time. Unless, of course, we wear out our welcome. And if we ignore the information that they give us. And I think it's really fair enough. You know, when they're struggling with something or something's difficult, we just haven't cracked the code yet. And I find as time goes on, there are fewer and fewer moments where I really insist that my idea is the idea that needs to be done right now when it comes to training. And there's more and more times when I just listen even more deeply than I think I've already been listening, because I think they show us so much. And I think it's fair enough. Like, they always know best about what they're feeling and what they're experiencing. Anyway, I think it's just fascinating. Fascinating how, you know, Cora was put here to go, okay, experienced horse trainer lady, you think you know? Let me show you. And then humbleness is a great trait to have in horsemanship. So Cora keeps me humble, but man, the feeling of connection is so worth it. These sensitive mares, sometimes especially, like, they just show you everything. And for me, I'm like, yeah, bring it. I'm here to learn. I'm here to learn from them. So you've probably, if you've been listening to my stuff, you've heard me talk about the Happy Athlete Training Scale. And this is actually a perfect example of a practical application of this. I want to tell you about an online course that I have, and I'm really excited about it. It's called How to Create a Happy Athlete, and it's based on the Happy Athlete Training Scale, which is a proven framework for ethical training that prioritizes your horse's well-being as you move up the levels. Now, if you're the kind of person who loses sleep worrying about how to keep your horse happy and still advance, then you're not oversensitive. You're just really aware, and it means you care. And those are actually superpowers. The reality is, you don't have to choose between results and your relationship. You just need to know how to prioritize. So it's about being strategic and having a blueprint to guide you. And that's what the How to Create a Happy Athlete course does. Gives you that framework and then it shares key exercises. You'll get theory, demonstration, and you'll see me coaching riders through those exercises for their first time. It's really the ideal starting point for anyone of any discipline. It's actually my most concise, powerful, and least expensive online course. So if you've been wanting to learn more from me and you haven't been sure like exactly where to start, this is it. Now, if you're already studying dressage naturally, you're gonna love adding this to your library. So go to go.dressagenaturally.net/hats, as in HATS, Happy Athlete Training Scale. So again, that's go.dressagenaturally.net/HATS. And I'll leave the link in the show notes. All right, back to the pod. So just as a reminder, the Happy Athlete Training Scale is this little pyramid-y kind of looking thing. And the base of it is happiness. So your horse happy and you arriving to your horse happy. The next priority up from there is the harmony, how you and your horse are interacting together. Then above that, the third priority is communication, the quality of the communication, mental understanding. And then the fourth priority over that would be biomechanics, like how the horse is moving. And then when you have all of those things, then you can think about the fifth priority, which is your sport-specific skills. And so it really is a system of prioritizations. In terms of the practical application of the Happy Athlete Training Scale, the story I just told about Cora offering better canter to parts on her own than the ones that I ask for is an example of me prioritizing harmony over communication. Now, this often requires you putting aside your ego and your very smart thinking brain, but it's worth it. So notice your horses, listen to what they tell you. If something feels easier one day, yeah, pat yourself on the back for riding well or setting up the circumstances, but also don't assume the only thing to learn is that when they do what you tell them, it's better. Sometimes success comes from us doing what they tell us. And if things aren't working, we don't need to keep trying to make it work. We maybe just need to set up a different circumstance and let them show us. When things go well, try to gather as many data points as possible. So how does your horse feel when they just offer it and it happens and feels good? What did you do right before the thing that worked? What was your mood today? What was your horse's mood today? What did you do for a warm-up? How was the weather? How was the footing? What kind of energy did your horse have? What kind of energy do you have? What tempo were you at? How are you sitting? How are you breathing? I mean, this list is long. And believe me, when I'm riding Cora in those canters and she offers those canters at just the perfect moment with the perfect transition, my antennas are out there. I'm like, okay, now how can I make this happen in a predictable way? All right, so that'll actually be the next step. Well, I'm already kind of doing it. I'm like, how do I set it up? And then how do I let her know it's okay to do it if she feels like it? And then I'll be able to get closer and closer to it. And at some point, I will know exactly how she needs to be and what I need to do for that canter to part. So when you're riding your horse, like I said, when the stars align, enjoy it, you know, try not to overthink it, but do notice. Open up your awareness and notice. Like those magical moments I started talking to you about when the wind is blowing in the mane and your hair is blowing and you're sharing this moment together. It's that kind of noticing. There are so many beautiful, magical moments around us. So many that we have to block them out. Our brains evolved to block them out because if we didn't, we would just be in awe. But if you want more magical moments, open those antennas up and allow yourself to notice. Practice the state you need to be in order to notice. And as I talk about in the book, Finding Beauty, it's not about going to look for it. The more I just relaxed and was open, the more these things presented themselves. So horse training and life. Good to have an idea, and it's even better to be open and let things appear to you. All right, have fun with us. If this episode resonates with you, make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. Training horses is a long game. The more you listen, the more pieces of the puzzle you'll have. To see all your learning resources, visit dressagenaturally.net. That's where you'll find free videos, online courses, my book. You can sign up for my Wednesday Wisdom email or even book a private consult. Most of all, remember, you got this. Never underestimate the possibility for things to improve in ways you cannot yet imagine. Till next time, love your horse, move in harmony, and enjoy the process.